Welcome to the Noble Warriors Podcast. We call it the Noble Man Podcast, and I am stoked to have as our guest today Will Moore. Will is the men's pastor, a newly minted, freshly engaged men's pastor at Long Hollow Baptist Church, but he's not new to the church, so we're going to hear some of his story and get some excitement from him about what God is already doing through his work there. So, Will Moore, welcome to the podcast from Hendersonville, Tennessee.
That's right. Thanks so much, man. I am excited about this. You've been just out of the gate, a huge mentor of mine and an instant friend. And so it's exciting that you asked me to be a part of this, and I'm honored to be a part.
Oh, well, it's sweet for me too. So tell me the story. You have been doing student ministry at Long Hollow, which tell us a little bit about Long Hollow. A lot of folks in the Baptist world and in the Noble Warriors world know about it, but give us a little demographic update on Long Hollow and then what you've been doing, and then we'll talk about this transition.
Yeah, the interesting thing about Long Hollow Church is it's in the middle of nowhere, Tennessee. It's north of Nashville, so most of the time I just tell people I'm from Nashville because Hendersonville, nobody really knows, but it's really a rural area in farmland, and then when we send people the address, they're like, where am I? And then it opens up into this massive, 20, 30 something acres of a church. And yeah, God has done really the remarkable over the tenure of our church. And if you were to go over the timeline, it started, I mean, we're 47 years old at this point, and it was started in a dining room with some people who had a love and a passion for Jesus and a dream. And then God blessed it. And here we are, started from 5 to 6 people, and it's grown to a couple thousand people now. But so it's really an interesting, as far as demographic of our church, it's really interesting. But to see what God has done in our church is unheard of. And and so I've been here for 10 years. I started in 2013 as one of our student guys at one of our campuses. That's the fun thing that Pastor Robbie says now is he grew our church from 5 campuses to 1. But I was brought on from our former pastor who passed away, David Landreth. And Landreth was a huge mentor of mine and brought me in. He passed away 21 months after I started, 52 years old, young, wow. and died from cancer. But after that, Pastor Robbie comes in and is just, we're so honored, so blessed to have him. And now I have done student ministry for 10 years. And pastor comes to me in January and says, right at my 10-year mark, I started February 18 of 2013, I started in student ministry. And in January, he comes to me and says, we're going to do a lot of shifting and changing in philosophy. And he said, one of the things I want to see is a healthy and thriving men's ministry. And he asked if I would take on that task. And I looked at him like he was crazy. I maybe even said he was crazy. And because I'm kind of known as the passionate student guy. And to take me out of that, well, I don't like that wording, but to move me out of sure. that into this opportunity was a big, I guess, undertaking for my wife and I, because we were just like, I mean, we've done students for years. And so, so since January, I finished my transition leading the student ministry through camp season, which at Long Hollow is a really big deal. But then also simultaneously building this men's ministry and trying to learn men's ministry. But I officially transitioned after camp. So in July, we really hit the ground running and launching everything. And so now October, and I'm the men's pastor. I just tell people I've adulted over the last 10 months.
Yeah, so you're 3 months into this and already got some cool stories to tell. But let me back up just a little bit, because you said you grew from a church of 5 or 6 to a couple thousand. Well, a couple thousand is a bit of an understatement, I think. So go ahead and tell us, I mean, you guys had a big revival about a year and a half ago, I think, and baptized a bunch of people. I mean, you've literally seen this church kind of explode. And so really, what is the magnitude of it?
Yeah, we in the student ministry world, the numbers game becomes a little bit of a, it just gets annoying after a while. So sure. In the student ministry world, it's like, who can one up another? And it really is just, right. It's not biblical. And it really is just all about the leader. I like to say, when you get into all that stuff and that becomes what's on the forefront, I beg to question if you're using evangelism as a tool to grow your own ministry, your own brand.
Right.
So for us, we're really big on discipleship. So we obviously matrix and understanding, like, is what we're doing working? So numbers do matter. So for context, we're probably roughly around, you know, 6,000 to 8,000 people. But in 2020, we saw in 8 months time, we saw 8 to 10 months time, we saw 1,600 and I believe 75 people baptized, people moving in from all over the country to be a part of Long Hollow, literally uprooting their families, leaving their jobs. And all we were doing is presenting the gospel and trusting that God was going to do something with it. And in that 10 months, we saw in student ministry alone, we saw 300 students saved, 583 students baptized, 62 called to ministry and missions. Like, so God's been moving since 2020 in a very, very big way. And then we're kind of on to a second wave of that, which is interesting. You know, people say, you know, did the revival stop? I don't think revival necessarily stops. I think you just, you stop looking at it in a certain way. And so this year, since you and I met in March, we baptized 500 in 2 weeks in 4 weeks here lately. So it's been nuts. It's just, you sit back and you just look at what God is doing. And the cool thing about it is not one person can say, I did this, or Pastor did this, or we planned this. It's just, we wake up, we present the gospel, and God brings the growth that he sees fit.
And I love the fact that this is growth in baptisms. I mean, these are new believers. I mean, there's probably, as you said, people uprooting, coming and bringing their families. And some of those were engaged believers from other parts of the country or other parts of the region that are now at Long Hollow. But you're really talking about a lot of freshly saved folks who are new to the kingdom. I mean, they're new brothers and sisters in Christ that are learning at this juncture, how do I walk this out? Because it's one thing to get a guy or a family to say yes to Jesus. It's quite a different prospect to help them understand how do you live that out, because Satan's going to keep pounding them regardless. And so that's why I love the focus on discipleship, because evangelism is a win, but discipleship is huge. We've got to help these people walk that out. So I know that's always been part of what you guys have done.
Yeah, and I think that's the difference. I think when people, again, I'm coming out of student ministry world, learning the men's ministry world. But for me, from my experience, I've got guys that are calling me and going, "What are you doing?"
Yeah,
and for us, we're answering that with we're doing discipleship. And but you're seeing a mass influx of people. But when you disciple well and you teach the Bible and God draws people there, then you have the opportunity. And this is why I said what I said. If you know, I said this one time at a conference, I said, it was right after camp season, and, you know, camp season is kind of what we're experiencing as a whole, as a church. It's a mass influx, and then you have big decisions, and then what do you do with them? I said, if you can tell me the number of baptisms you've had over the last 3 months, but you can't tell me where those kids are now, then that's a problem. Yeah. And that's why I said, are we using evangelism as a means to grow our own church or our own brand? See, what we're seeing and what I love about our pastor's heart is we have a clear next step for anybody that makes a decision. So if you're baptized, we're not just turning that number in. We're going, okay, what team are we assimilating them to? How are they being discipled? What is their next step? And we actually have a plan in place. And I think that's why God is really honors your stewardship of his people.
Well, God honors obedience, and so you're shepherding the flock that's under your care, and you're doing the Great Commission, go and make disciples. And so I think, sadly, and I get myself in a little trouble with how often I bring this up, but it doesn't say that the mandate is not go and make converts, because converts stops. It's like bunting. I mean, it's hard to make a game out of bunting. And so you've got to play the whole game. And as a matter of fact, a men's ministry guy, Patrick Morley, said, and I love this quote, he said, "Evangelism without discipleship is cruel." And that's a hard saying, but I am fearful that we have lots of guys who have been introduced to Jesus, but have never enjoyed the full benefit and the grace of what it is like to walk with him and love your wife the way Christ loved the church and invest in your kids, because they've never been discipled. It's not that they didn't want that. It's often that the church is not equipped to give them that. we're so focused on evangelism that we miss discipleship. And there has to be a balance between the two. So I don't want to throw one out and keep the other, but
I'll even say this. I think if I can say this word, I don't know how provocative this podcast gets necessarily, but discipleship's not sexy. It's not. And often it kind of messes up the flow and the swag and what we want, because take an example. We had a major breakdown at the conference you came to with us. Yeah. And what I mean by that is we saw probably 40 to 60 men come down front and say, I want a relationship with Jesus. And then for whatever reason, pastor didn't have them. He just blanked. I don't know what happened or why. And he looked at me like, I don't know what happened, but he didn't send them to our next steps room. Wow. And I'm down in the front row going, send them.
Yeah.
And so I was willing to step up back on stage and in the sake of like transitions being weird, make an announcement and go, hey, if you came down front, if you made a decision, because for us, that was the most important part of this night. It wasn't about how many guys showed up. It was about how are we helping these men make their next step. And so a lot of people are going, well, we just missed an opportunity. No, you scrap the flow of your service. You scrap the transition or even potentially the awkwardness. You step into it to go, have we stewarded those men in the decision they made?
Yeah.
And so I would say don't be afraid to disrupt what you've got planned to help these men make this next step.
Well, and this is when the Spirit is moving. We need to respond to that. And I know there are sometimes when we can take that too far, perhaps. But man, when God's moving on someone's heart, then we need to take some responsibility as believers and brothers in Christ to help them. As a matter of fact, I call it the RNS. You've mentioned take the next step, and I call it, you've got, every time you're doing something with men, you have to know the answer to the question, what is the right next step?
Right.
And I'll say to you, it was kind of funny because David Romanigan and myself were in the back of the auditorium just kind of watching this. And David said, hey, dude, we might have to go into the next step room and counsel with some of these guys. And so what I love about that is that David in the back of the room knew the protocol. Yeah. I mean, he knows when someone says yes to Jesus, we give them the next step. And so I hope that's not highlighting a miss there too much, but I just love the fact that it's so deep in your DNA that even your people in the congregation are thinking, okay, we know what happens next.
Which is funny because my phone was blowing up, but we had men ready. And then we laughed afterwards. I said, never in 1,000 years would I thought I would have to remind pastor to send them. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, and that's what I love about our pastor too. He's not, he's flawed as well, right? He's not a perfect person. And he looked at me and he said, look, I missed it. Don't know what happened. And so, but yeah, our men knew, our men were ready because they knew we had primed them and they knew the most important thing that happens tonight is men make a decision. Which ultimately the whole night was designed for every man to make a decision. That just happened to be a salvation decision.
Yeah. Well, let me hit another thing. So the pastor that we're talking about, Pastor Robbie, is Robbie Gallaty, who has a reputation for being focused on discipleship. So this whole idea of a progression of spiritual development is not new to Long Hollow. What I would ask, though, is the emphasis on helping men in this very specifically and intentionally with the idea of pointing them toward biblical manhood, toward dealing with some of the issues that men deal with, that seems like that's getting some fresh attention and some fresh energy, some fresh resourcing. Is that a fair assessment of kind of what's going on with your transition and a refocusing there?
Yeah, 100%. You know, one of the things when I first started at Long Hollow, we've been known as a next gen church.
Right.
Our former pastor was real big in next gen. And so our church, oddly enough, this is unheard of, is kind of the cow following the calf mentality, where our student ministry grew significantly midway through Pastor David's, our former pastor's tenure at Long Hollow. And what happened was we went from like 140 students to over 600 to over 1,000. And what happened was it was such an enticing thing for the kids to come. The parents followed them. And then we saw an astronomical amount of growth. So we were known as student ministry driven, We were known as evangelistically driven. And the pastor comes on, heart for discipleship. What do we do with these people? And now one of the reasons he asked me to do this is because he understands if we are equally, or not equally, if we are even more passionate about that happening with men,
right?
Statistically proven, and you and I know this, that then if we can do that and get the dads as excited as those students were, then y'all, this isn't just something that influences our church. It influences our community, and it influences, and this is the heart of mine, generations to come.
Right.
So when he came to me, he said, look, I want you to do student ministry, but in a very unique way. If you can reach the father, you reach that student, but we're not just reaching the student, we're reaching generations.
That's
and
right.
So that's the way we're looking at it is we can properly engage, equip, and send out the men, then it changes the game astronomically. And so that is pastor's heart is how do we engage men, but not beat them down? And that's where a lot of men's ministries, as I'm learning, and you and I've talked a lot about, when I came onto this, I was like, I don't know a stinking clue about men's ministry. So I want to learn. And man, I'm telling you, it breaks my heart to go almost all the conversations I had was you gotta tell them straight up. I'm like, the guys I've met with over 120 men since January to now, one-on-one, trying to get a finger on the pulse of our ministry. And I'm telling you, they are beat down. They feel like failures. They feel like they can't get any successes spiritually or in the home. And I'm going, they don't need beat up. They need to be built up.
Exactly.
And so that's where we are is how can we engage them, give them truth, right? You know, we're both athletics. I've got a college athletic background. Like, I get it. You can speak straightforward, but the coach that motivated me the most wasn't the one that beat me down. He's the one that built me up. And so that's kind of our mentality is we're going to disciple these men, call them to more, call them to what Christ has asked them to be, but do it in a way that's inspirational, motivational, and really, dadgummit, I want to be a part of this.
There you go. So I can tell that this you may have had some trepidation at the beginning of this. Like, you know, I've got a staff. I know what I'm doing. I got a routine and a rhythm. I work with kids. My wife is kind of dialed in for this, and my life is dialed in for this. And now you're going to disrupt it with this area that honestly you're having to learn about. And the truth is, there's movement out there in the men's space, but there's not nearly as much information, resourcing, consulting available for men's discipleship in the local church as there is for youth ministry. And so you're having to figure out this whole thing. So tell me emotionally, what has that been like? Are you finding yourself in an excited place now and enthusiastic about this? Or are you still just kind of wondering, am I still kind of wandering in the wilderness here?
You know, it's funny because Amy and I had this conversation a few months ago. We both kind of just locked eyes and started like, are you feeling what I'm feeling? And what she meant by that was, she goes, should I feel this excited about stepping out of students now? And because it was like, this is our heart. And I'll be honest, Mike, there was a lot. Now, there's a lot to my transition,
sure.
But a lot of layers there. But for us, it was like, why would you ask us to step out after 10 years? This is a milestone. This has been my heart, is longevity in student ministry. How do we build a team that's in it for the long haul instead of the 10-month lifespan of a student pastor right now? And we had seen that God is moving. We have an incredible team we built. And then you want me to step out of that? So there's these lots of emotions. And just to be honest, at my weakest, I'm insecure.
Sure.
And so I pride myself. I'm a 3-2 on the Enneagram. So I like affirmation. I like performance. And I'm stepping out of something that I felt like I was decent at. We had seen some success into. I have no clue what I'm doing when it comes to men's ministry. So these emotions were real. But what I am thankful for is my dad taught me early on years ago is be a listener, be a learner, be a sponge. You can never be successful. It's hard to be successful if you're unwilling to learn.
Right.
And that's what I did. And that's how you and I met, is I'm going, how can I learn? And how can I take in information, understanding you're not an expert in this, but how do you become one? And so I just started listening and learning. And through the listening and the learning, I learned that there was a massive gap. I learned that there was a need. And for me and my personality, I need to be angry about something in a good way. because I know that my anger for something draws out a passion within me that God uses and is and fuels me. And what I learned was there's only 8% of churches have a men's ministry. Yeah. 84% have a women's ministry. And when I looked at it, they're copying and pasting men's ministries all across the country and going, why are we not seeing any success or movement in the men? Well, one, you're boring the heck out of them. You're asking them to get up super early and you just yell at them. You know, I'm like, that's not working. So God began to put a need on my heart, which became kind of that anger, which birthed this passion. And now it's like, I don't want to go back to what I was doing because I see the need and it's so great that, Amy and I both have become super passionate about it. And for context, she does full-time anesthesia. So she's not even, she just serves as much as she can with me, but she's like my right hand. She's my ride or die. And we talk about it and process it. And so like, I want to be known as the guy that's passionate about men's ministry and passionate about seeing men across the country understand what it looks like to be a man of God. And we tell people that we're trying to build a legacy of men who live out their God-given calling as they follow Jesus and make disciples every day. Why? Because if that happens, we've got men in our world who are spirit-led followers, intentional friends, humble guides, and forces for good. That's what we're hoping to see here.
Amen. And I love the fact that you're coming at this from a student ministry background, and it would be foolish of us to think that you haven't seen in conversations with some students the misses of dads who did not get what their responsibility and their opportunity and their privilege was to disciple their own kids and to love them well into the kingdom. And so, man, I think you're in a better student ministry position now than you ever were with your huge staff and all of that stuff, because the opportunity that you have to encourage men to engage their kids as infants, toddlers, preschoolers, elementary, middle, high school. I mean, the church only gets them for so many hours, but mom and dad get them for much longer. And if you can help a dad engage his kids well and engage his kids' friends, and even as adults, you know, Stacy and I right now have four adult children, and we are learning new things about parenting. That's just glorious. I mean, my phone just pinged, and my son is going through an interview process right now, and he said, "Hey, Dad, just finished up an interview. I feel a little bit lighter now." Man, I've been praying for my son while he's in these interviews, and for dads to feel the joy of investing in their kids, and you can equip them to do that. That's huge multiplication of the kingdom.
Yes. Yes. Well, and what I'm learning is men just don't feel equipped. It's not that men don't want to, they don't know how.
Yeah.
And I think that's an indictment on the church that we've failed. And I think because this is through my own personal conviction, I think it's because the church has missed the mark, and we have preached a destinational gospel over the last 50 years instead of a relational gospel. Therefore, young boys become men who become fathers, who become grandfathers, and their relationship with Jesus has been attached to a decision that was made for a destination. Do you want heaven? Do you want hell? And there was no discipleship because there was no relationship there. And so what we got to do as the church, and we're going to start one man at a time, is we have to draw men to a relational gospel, relationship with Jesus, so that, get this, so then they will have they understand that relationship. They understand the importance of a relationship with their son.
Right.
And when in relationship happens, transformation happens.
Well, a relationship with their son, but also I had a young man who's 18 years old on Tuesday morning stick around after my Better Man group at Southeastern Seminary. And he said, "Hey, Mr. Young, I started a new job. I'm working for an HVAC company. I'm a believer trying to live out my faith in an environment with unbelievers. These guys are older than I am. How can I be an example to other guys? Give me some help in doing that." So one of the things that I'm constantly pressing on is men's discipleship is not only about the guy who's been married for 10 years and has 2.5 kids, but this young 18-year-old guy, Sterling, is asking how he can be an influence for the kingdom and a winsome witness of the gospel in a secular environment in a work truck. And so, man, if we can equip those guys to do that and see that as part of manhood, that's a huge win.
Well, and I think too, and that's part of the thing that I learned too, Mike, in this, and I remember running just triggered a thought, but I remember when I first started Long Hollow, there was a guy that was in for like 2 months, and he said, "In all my years of experience," and they all looked at him like, "You've been here for 2 months, you know." So what I mean by that is I understand I'm 10 months into this, and I'm learning so much, and what I learned too through this is we've got to look at men's ministry differently in regards to the age demographic, because what you're talking about, if we look at men's ministry as 19 and above, meaning I've graduated college or graduated high school, and now I'm an adult, right? The age of adolescence is 25 now. So an 18-year-old is far from an adult, right? But so what we've done is I go, okay, then how do we start now training and equipping men, right? We can't look at it as kids, students, college, young adult, men. We got to look at it as how do we train men now? So we're looking at men's ministry in two different pools. One, 19 and up, right? And that's, you know, roughly 2,600 here. But I've extended it to 13. So we're looking at men's ministry as 13 and up, so that 13's pushing it, but 13 is you're in a brand new transition. That's a milestone. How can we take a 13-year-old and prepare them to be an 85-year-old grandfather or great grandfather? You know, so that's the way I think men's ministries that I'm learning are looking at it, and I think they need to expand their view of a man as far as age is concerned and go, look, if you don't start now, you can't expect them to just transition out of high school and understand what it looks like to be a man.
Right. I mean, the only thing that God can use to make a man is a boy. Now, our culture has some issues with that right now in certain places, but so I would even take it further. We've got to start talking about what does our children's ministry look like as we are investing in, you know, because boys and girls learn differently, they experience things differently. And so how do we get, honestly, more men involved in children's ministry so that they have a picture, they're catching a vision of what does adult manhood look like? And you're exactly right, casting that vision far down the road for not just getting to a certain point, but running the entire race and running it well. And so love your perspective on that. Well, let's talk about, you guys did a kickoff event a few weeks ago and had huge response from that. I was privileged to be there. That's the event that I was at that Will just mentioned. And the scale of it was a little out of bounds for me. It was just pretty crazy how many guys were there. And if you guys go to our Facebook page, and we'll put a link, I've got some videos of that whole thing. But the scale of it was awesome, but... And that night was incredible, but you also planned for what happens next. So just give a little perspective on the planning and the thinking and the preparation that goes in that and what you're hoping to see come out of it.
Yeah, so part of what I learned through meeting with these 100-plus men was I learned that the majority of them were telling me things that I didn't expect them to tell me. I thought they were going to go, hey, I really need to go deeper in my faith. I need to memorize scripture, read the Bible more. I need accountability, all these things, which are true. But what came out was marriage, parenting, lack of friendships, addiction. The list went on and on and on. I'm going, oh my gosh. We need some very foundational, get men aligned across the board and just go, let's meet them where they are for the everyday man.
Yeah, they need practical help.
Practical help. And so the reason I say that is I was turned on to through David Romig, who works with you and is on the board with you. He turned me on to Better Man, Robert Lewis, Men's Fraternity 33, now Better Man. And I started studying that, and I go, we need an opportunity. We need to create an opportunity where we can on-ramp men into groups.
Yeah,
because if they're telling me 90% of them, Mike, told me that they had no friends, that's a problem.
And these are guys in the church.
Brothers
and sisters in Christ. And you can imagine the loneliness and isolation outside the church, other than some drinking buddies that might hang out and watch a game together.
Right. Which is great, which is fun, but there's no depth there. So for me, I go, okay, the Lord gave me this. How do you create an environment where men can connect, can find community, but they're only going to rally around significant and relevant content?
Exactly.
So we started thinking content can be our connection, community, content. That's where the kickoff came. We called it Better Man kickoff because we were going to launch them into groups. But Better Man Night was an opportunity to create an environment and an atmosphere where men just came and they connected. And we had men shaking hands, introducing themselves. The environment was fun. It was interactive. We had lots of food, just to provide an opportunity for men to connect. But the purpose of the night was for them to be into a group. So the whole night was built around an end goal, which was, all right, if we get out of there and we go, we had 1,500 men in a room and we celebrate that number, but then there's no next step for them, then that's a failure. Exactly. So we go, let's get as many men in a room to point them to one central thing for them to say yes or no to be in a community group, a discipleship group, which the resource that we were using was Better Man, or is Better Man, which is why we called it a Better Man Night. And the turnout was, I mean, mind blowing. I was told going into it, I laugh about this now, because as a young guy with no experience in men's ministry, I've got men who mean well, and they're telling me, let me temper your expectation. And they said, if you get more than 800 men in a room, I'd be surprised. And then the Lord's like, okay. So we had, we had 1,500. But Mike, here's what's incredible, is we saw a hunger. You were there. You saw it. It was an excitement. Yeah. It was hunger. It was, we are ready for something. Tell us what to do. And it was like, what do you have for us? What can we do? And what we gave them was, we see the importance of you being in a group with like-minded men from different areas of life, different backgrounds, different demographics, financial ethnicities, you name it. We want to put you in an environment to get uncomfortable, but to grow. And the way we're going to do that is a discipleship group, and the resource is Better Man. And Mike, like, I can only summarize it as God, because we just finished our first week. Since that night that you're talking about until now, we've been working hard to build groups, and we've got 800 men sitting around tables, chopping it up. And I don't even know how to explain it. I was in awe. I drove home Wednesday night in tears, just in tears, going, one, all the emotion that we talked about earlier. God, why would you call me out of student ministry? Why would you put me into this opportunity and have me, this task? And then I saw it. And the Lord told me this. He said, if you can do for one man what your grandfather did for your dad, then that's success. Because look at what it's done generationally. Yeah. And I just lost it. And so anyways, Better Men Night, huge kickoff. But we've got men in discipleship groups. And it's going to be the foundation, I believe, to create a movement of men that not only influence our church, but influence our community and ultimately influence the country.
That's huge. Let me ask you a couple of questions, because you talked about 1,500 and guys were kind of naysaying up till that point. Well, you and I were interacting some, and just as this is men's ministry pro tip for today, guys, guys don't sign up until the last minute. How were your numbers coming up to that, and how anxious were you about all those Boston butts that you'd bought to smoke and all that craziness? Because this is part. David told you, I've got years of history for conference registration on the wall in my office so that I don't lose hope about what could happen at the last minute. So tell me about the anxiety of that.
I'm just going to tell you, I was stressed to the max, and I learned real quick. It was a lot easier communicating with students' moms to sign them up for camp. But here's the thing though. I'm looking at everything right now as a need, right? It's like, why are men so passive? Passivity isn't just spiritually. It's just for some reason men are passive right now. And so so we were literally I'm laughing because we were like 100 men on Thursday. Or no, 93 men on Thursday, a week and a half before the event. 93 on Thursday. And then we went to 400 on that Monday, and then we hit a stall, and I'm going, I've got 2,000 pounds of barbecue coming. I've put $2,000 or 2,000 shirts on order. And then I had to hit my knees and pray and go, God, you're going to bring who you want here. I got to trust that. It's not about the numbers. It's about what you want to do. And then literally 1,000 men signed up in one day.
Yeah. Yeah, welcome to men's ministry events. No, you it, and so I think sometimes that, you know, that happens. I you and I texted a little bit back and forth because, man, I get it. I delay signing up for things a lot of times myself. I mean, I got four kids and two grandkids and four vehicles that are in various states of disrepair and a mortgage and things breaking. And there's a lot of variables in my life. And so I can't always see whether or not I can say yes to something until I get closer to it.
Yeah.
And it's just part of what we deal with. But it is not easy for guys like you and me who are watching those numbers and thinking, I got a lot on the line here. But it's also the Lord reminding us, I think, this is about me. This is my work. These are my men. And you, I'm inviting you to be part of shepherding them and to do something amazing in their lives. But I'm going to get the credit. I'm going to do the work. And it's just, it's humbling, isn't it?
100% humbling, because there's God's the only one that brought those men there. Because when you have 1,000 men come, so I learned a lot. There's a lot of like understanding and learning the men's ministry. That's one thing. I don't want to be okay with that. I want to help try to change the trajectory of that, which we've got some plans to do that.
Sure.
But I also understand that, like, if all of those men, Mike, would have signed up when I thought they were going to, my personality, my heart would have looked at our core team going, yo, we did this.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, I left in tears because I go, only God could have done something like that. So that was for the Lord to remind me real quick that you need to calm down there, buddy.
Yeah. You know, another thing that I'll say is these numbers, I know we do, I mean, we can't avoid, because of our humanity and our flesh, the way we do things, we can't help but count numbers from time to time. But I've learned also when I'm dealing with men, man, the impact is much bigger. If I do something and there are five guys there, I don't count five lives touched. I count five spheres of influence touched. And so when you think about 1,500 guys coming to this event, you think about a guy going home and having a conversation with his wife or having a different posture at work. Or, you know, so when we invest in men, because of the way God designed men, this is general revelation, because of the way God designed men, there is influence around them that flows out of their presence. And it can either be good or bad.
Right.
And when we are pouring out Christ into the lives of these men and sending them out, then your impact is much larger than the number of bodies sitting in front of you. And it is so important for us in this space, in the men's ministry realm, to remember that we are influencing and ministering to the influencers, and the impact that they're going to have is multiplied.
Right. And the way we look at it is, what is your circle of impact?
Yeah.
And that's the way we're monitoring our success. A weekly gathering obviously is important. But then that circle of impact is really what we're honing into, because we're not looking at 800 men in groups. We're looking at 800 right. men times 2.675 or whatever it is in the family unit. But then also you take their circle of impact outside of the family, which is what you're talking about. Work,
right.
friendships. So really, right. if you had 1,516 men at that conference, the family alone, that's 3,750 people influenced, right? Because that man went
yeah.
home. And
yeah.
then you think about all the other stuff. So yeah, I think one of the things you've got to look at is you got to look at the span of reach. You got to look at what is the circle of impact per man. And that's really, and you can't monitor that.
No,
and that's where I think
no
a
way.
Lot of churches, you got to be okay with that.
Yeah,
that's why
absolutely.
the numbers are important, but the numbers can skew your view of thinking, and you get so consumed with it, because, which is why discipleship isn't sexy. And I said that in the beginning,
right.
is I can't, there's no realistic way for me to take 1,516 men and go, all right, tell me, who all did you talk to?
Right.
How are you seeing this lived out right now in your life? Because God's just going to do what he wants to it, and we got to be
right.
okay with it. And so, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a big topic. But
yeah, and I think part of what happens in this, I mean, here's another pro tip for men's ministry, guys. You will often not hear from the guys themselves about the impact of the discipleship work that you're doing and the encouragement that you're giving to them. The reinforcement for that work is really going to come through their wives and their kids when a wife says, I'm not sure what's going on Tuesday morning, but it's making a difference in my man's life, and thank you for doing that. That's where some of the encouragement and you get to, that's where the fruit report comes from, I guess we can say.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, I will say, though, to your point, men are stressing me out. I mean, I've said the amount of details that I have sent out, and they just asked a question that's already been answered 1,000 times. But we're going to get there. We've got, like I said, we've got a plan. Hopefully the Lord will honor that, where we can help try to change some of these things where signing up early and paying attention to details may be a big thing.
Yeah. You mentioned something earlier, and if I can get this from you, I'd love to share it. But at the event that I was at, there was a tribute made for your dad. And so pretty cool video of him, and we'd love to link to that in the show notes here. But you said, if I could do for one what my grandfather did for my father, and I'm part of the result of that, and this ministry and what God's doing through Will and Amy is part of that fruit. Give just a little bit of that picture, because, man, if you can see one man change, and the downstream from that is huge. So tell a little bit of that personal story.
Yeah, you know, so for me, my dad grew up in a very very difficult situation. His dad walked out on him when he was 6 months old, left a single mom of three kids, dirt poor, had nothing. She worked three jobs, grew up in a very difficult environment. His only view of a man was one that walked out on him, one that was abusive, and one that had no money. And then a big piece of that is his view of Christianity was the buddies he hung out with and got drunk with and did all the crazy stuff with. And then the only difference in he and they was they had to get up early and go to church with a hangover, and he got to sleep it off. So
yeah,
lots of factors there on his view of a man and the church. But then he meets my mom in high school, meets my grandfather, and saw something significantly different than he had ever seen in a man. And the central theme, the central difference in that man, my grandfather, was Jesus.
Yeah.
And so my dad was drawn. That's why I'm talking about that relational gospel is so important. Because if my granddad would have just sit down and say, Kenny, if you were to die today, would you go to heaven or hell? My dad would have been like, I'm never coming back to this place.
Right.
But my grandfather saw something in him, and he began to invest in my dad. And as a result, my dad was drawn to what was inside of my grandfather, and then eventually surrendered his life over time to Jesus, and got married and made a decision to break the sin cycle, if you will, in the lineage of his name, to go, I want to be a man who's known for being an intentional husband, an intentional father, and somebody that loves Jesus.
Yeah.
So we shared that story.
Yeah, it's a wonderful video tribute. And I wanted to pick up on that, because when you say my grandfather influencing my father, it would be easy to think that it was your dad's dad, but it was your mom's dad that influenced him. And so I just love that part of the story in particular. And so I'm thankful for that. Hey, listen, what kind of feedback, the guys who have been there on Tuesday morning and Wednesday night, you guys are running two Better Man groups. You've probably already heard some feedback from those guys coming out of the gate. The first session of Better Man is Manhood Today. As a matter of fact, we'll link to Better Man in the show notes here so you can get to a link in that. And but what was the guy's immediate response? Did you get any feedback from those guys about how they felt about the content as they first experienced it?
Yeah, my first text message I got was, I'll be honest, I did not expect this. And it was just because it's so simple. It is so simple. And that's why it was so important to use it, because it just meets you where you are, regardless of where you are. And so they were like, I didn't anticipate any guys talking. I thought it was going to be, you know, awkward. I don't know these guys sitting around a table, and they've been blown away. Here's how I summarize it, Mike. I walked out of the room. We all meet in our main worship center auditorium. You know, we've got 98 tables in there, guys meeting around there. I walked out and I came back in during the group time.
Yeah.
And it was just a roar of conversation.
Yeah.
And it just hit me. It's like, when's the last time we've had this many men sitting and talking about these things? And so we had men crying on the first day. I'm like, that's success.
Yeah.
We had men that were going, look, I've got guys at my table that have never even been to church. They have no clue how they even wound up here. And so there is an excitement. There is still some reservation from some guys, obviously.
Yeah.
But for the most part, my phone has been blowing up, going, we are ready for this. You were there. My whole wording and phrasing right now is, I'm real big on motivation and how do we get guys bought in. And so I'll ask them, are you all in?
Yep.
Meaning, all in is all over the map, but are you all in here and in your heart and physically showing up? And I'm getting texts going, I'm all in, I'm all in, I'm all in. And so, yeah, there's a lot of excitement around the discussion and the content right now.
It's incredible. So I want to close this in just a few moments, but interesting, I'm doing Better Man with a group of students at Southeastern Seminary. And last week I was in a class and was talking with some guys about their relationship with their dad. We were on session four, the dad factor, and a young guy, Jagger, was telling us, when I mentioned Long Hollow, he said, oh, that was my church that I grew up in. And then I started hearing his story about the fact that he came to faith at like 17.
Yep.
And as we're talking about dads, he said, you know, things were kind of backwards for me. My dad didn't lead me to Christ and discipled me. I came to Christ first and then really shared the gospel with my dad and led him to Christ and then discipled him. He said, as a matter of fact, I baptized my dad.
Yep.
And I mean, how wild is that? And so Jagger is going through Better Man at Southeastern Seminary with the group that I'm leading and connected with you about the fact that you guys are doing it. So God is at work all over the place all the time with just amazing stories that you couldn't write. What's your recollection of Jagger and his story?
Jagger's got a very, very inspiring story. I remember when he came into the student ministry, and he came in and he left significantly different than he came in. And so I remember the story. I was very involved in his life. I had the privilege of discipling him and mentoring him and working through his call to ministry and battling the athletics and the college. You know, do I play ball in college? Do I surrender ministry? Because that was my story.
Yeah.
And so to see him now and to see the influence that he has on so many people, he's probably one of the most intentional people you'll ever be around. But yeah, I remember when he was able to baptize his dad and to walk through that process. It was a really, really sweet moment. And as a student pastor, that's a really big deal. I try to keep up with as many students as I can. It's hard when you're rolling through 1,000 a year, but it's that's a special story. I'll remember Jagger for a long time.
Yeah, great stuff. Well, I love it. Will, I would love to do this from time to time and just get your updates on what you're learning, how you're growing in this position, because you know, not every church is as large as Long Hollow and has the reach that you guys do. But guys, if you're listening to this and there's not, your church probably doesn't have a men's pastor, but you could be the Will Moore at your church. You could be the guy who God gives a passion, births a passion in you for investing in men, and you could begin to catalyze some of the work in your local church and invite your pastor, encourage your pastor to look more at how do we build men up rather than beating them up. You may be the David Romig in your church, because I know David is the chairman of our board of directors, and I think when David first showed up at Long Hollow after they moved out to Tennessee, he started asking, well, where's the men's ministry? Who's in charge? Who do I talk to? And so, guys, I would just encourage you, be a catalyst. Listen to the Lord as he invites you to stir things up with men's discipleship. I can't imagine a more significant ministry that multiplies itself because of the spheres of influence of men. So, Will, any ways that we can pray for you or just continue to cheer for and encourage what the Lord is doing in you and through you here?
Yeah, so part of my last year's journey of working and wrestling through all this is just I was in the middle of burnout and didn't know it. And so I was this time last year, I just now walked out of my sabbatical, an extended sabbatical. My marriage was not where it needed to be. I wasn't a great husband. I wasn't a great father. The ministry had taken that from me. I let it do that. And so my identity was not very good. And so to look now over a year to see where my family is, I would say my family is my main priority now. So just be praying for Amy and I and Willow. Willow is a firecracker.
She is four. I met her.
That girl does not stop. She's our miracle baby. She's an IVF baby, so we're thankful. But she is everything we could have had in 10 kids in one. So my family, the thing that we have felt that I haven't mentioned is I went from a staff of 12 to a staff of one.
Right.
And so there's a lot on my plate. But what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to be 90 to 95% volunteer led. And so we're building a team of men right now. So I'm praying for more David Romigs. I just got a guy that kind of came up and said, I want to serve. And he's become my event coordinator. And so if you're on staff, don't think you have to have a staff. Some of the most influential and successful ministries in the country are those that are the most lean and the most hungry. And so we got to be moved from a doer to a developer mindset. So pray for me as I'm building a volunteer team.
I love it. Well, listen, thanks so much. We'll put some links to some of these resources, and hopefully I can get a link to that video to share with folks. I think that'd be fun to tell your dad's story. And, Will, I'm just very proud of you. I'm thankful for you making this transition and the work that you're doing, the influence that you're having, and the way God is shaping you for this work. I mean, he's kind of reforming and refocusing you. And I think that's glorious. Love the fact that you and your wife are in agreement about the fact that God is up to something here that's quite honestly probably bigger than you could have imagined when you got propositioned with this transition of responsibility. So I'm thankful for you, friend. So
awesome. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much, folks. Well, thanks for joining us for this episode of the Noble Man Podcast with Will Moore. He's the new men's pastor at Long Hollow Church in Hendersonville, Tennessee. And check out show notes and links for additional information for some of the resources we discussed. But I am so thankful that Will was with us. And God bless you, folks. Take care.